You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Welcome to Deep Dive Broadway. I'm Dori Berenstein, and I'm very excited to take you behind the screen on the making of the brand new Netflix series, Sweet Magnolias. I can't imagine a more perfect show for the world we're living in right now. Sweet Magnolias is all about renewal, joy, love, and perseverance. Based on the novels by Cheryl Woods, the show is also jam-packed with theater talent in the cast and behind the scenes, including Heather Headley and Brooke Elliott. Our guests are all top in their field, and they're responsible for bringing this very special show to life. I'm thrilled to welcome producer Dan Paulson, director Norman Buckley, and showrunner Cheryl Anderson. Let's dive in. Dan, Cheryl, Norman, welcome to Deep Dive Broadway and the Broadway Podcast Network. We're really excited to be able to talk with you about Sweet Magnolias. We're all very, very excited about this series. So the most important thing, I think, is to know a little bit about the show and how it all started day one, because this is a podcast about the creative process, and so fascinated to know all of you are legends and extraordinarily accomplished in what you do. And you all came together to create this exciting new show. So how did it start? What was day one?
Well, it started with Dan. So do you want to go first?
I guess, yeah. Day one was when I walked into Netflix with a series of books called Sweet Magnolias, which was written by an author who writes another series for me called Chesapeake Shores, which is on Hallmark. We're going into our fifth season. So it had, you know, it's having a nice run. And Netflix distributes the show for us in certain territories overseas, so they were aware of it. So the executive that I pitched it to was very open. And amazingly, in the room said, I'll never forget this. I've told the story many times. She said, when can you get us 10 episodes? And I said, you mean 10 scripts? That's amazing. Someone would say that. I've been a lot of meetings in my time. 10 episodes? She said, no, I mean 10. We don't do pilots. We don't do scripts. I mean 10 episodes. And I had to stop myself from passing out. I couldn't believe that. So we were well on our way. And ultimately, we handed the ball over to Cheryl, who's our showrunner. And needless to say, she had to get us there. I mean, you know, we had people that really wanted to do the show, but the showrunner has to execute. That's the hard part.
So, Cheryl, you get the call from Dan. And then what happened?
Well, Dan and Matt Drake, our producer, and I Skyped. And we had a conversation about the books and the central themes of the books. And the books appealed to me immediately because they're about women of a certain age reevaluating their lives, their relationships. And these are Southern women with a central character going through a bitter divorce. And I'm from Virginia and was in the middle of a bitter divorce. And I said, I feel like I know her pretty well. And so we talked through my take on it. I talked to Miss Woods and discussed some of the changes that we would have to make to move from romance novels to a TV series. We were going to have to add conflict, add characters because of the demands and expectations of the pace of a TV series as opposed to reading a novel. And she was wonderful and collaborative from our first conversation and remains so. So I had the joy of putting together a writer's room, and we took the core characters and the core events from the first three books in the series and then built around those. Those were sort of the pillars of the series. And then we, as I said, added people, slid the timeline back and forth a little bit, but wanted at all times to be true to the spirit of Miss Wood's stories and certainly these incredible women who are the center of the community.
And could you just give us a little context, a little bit more for each of these women and who they are? And I mean, I just can't imagine that any of you had any idea that this would be the perfect time to tell a story about renewal, about joy, about hope. You know, it just feels like it was meant to be. I know how hard it must be to be rolling this out right now, but what a perfect show. So tell us
Cheryl
a little bit about
the characters. Cheryl calls it Providence. Cheryl uses the word Providence. We many times on the show, and this is part of it.
It is pretty extraordinary to be in this position. And yes, Dan and Norman and I have talked a lot about the hand of Providence being on this show, from the people we were able to get in the writer's room to the people we were able to cast and the things that had to happen for the cast and schedules to line up, to Norman being available and the wealth of experience and the true artistic vision he brought to it, and even the moments that came, the thunderstorms we dodged and the other things that happened during production, where I think you always hope to feel that you're doing something special, but this experience was absolutely lovely, the best of my creative career. So it's an honor and a blessing to be rolling it out. And Norman and I have been talking a lot about that this week, to roll it out at a time when people need to hear a message of hope and community and renewal and resilience. And the three women who are at the center of this series embody that, because we have Maddie, who's played by Joanna Garcia Swisher, who is the one going through the divorce. She has three kids, a husband who flagrantly cheated on her, got his mistress pregnant, and is now divorcing her. She has to find her way forward in the small town she grew up in, one of those towns where everybody knows your business, whether you like it or not. But fortunately, she's supported by her two dearest friends, Dana Sue, who's played by Brooke Elliott, who is estranged from her husband, has a teenage daughter who's rebellious and is running her own restaurant. And Helen Decatur, who is the single childless member of the trio, who is a community leader, a lawyer, and just one of those incredible go-getter women who's always involved in everything, but still has to sit with her friends whenever they need it. And she is played by the amazing Heather Headley.
Well, right off the bat, because this is the Broadway Podcast Network, I just have to say, oh my goodness, I love all the theater connections with your whole team. It's really extraordinary. We're going to talk about that later. But Norman, when did you step into the process?
I was approached by Cheryl probably in January of 2019. We met for coffee and talked about the show and just seemed to have a very similar aesthetic and a similar way of approaching the ideas, the values of the material. We just hit it off. And then I met with Dan shortly after that, and we started prepping actually almost exactly a year ago. I think it was right around this time that we were location scouting and casting. So that's when I came aboard. I've worked on a lot of shows that center around the friendship of women, and so the material is resonant for me by virtue of the fact that I love telling those stories. I consider myself a teenage girl at heart, so the material really spoke to me, particularly in terms of the themes of resilience. The idea that in the face of whatever disappointment or loss or embarrassment or hurt that you get up and you go on and you go on with the help of your friends and you find joy again. And yes, it feels remarkably auspicious, actually, that the show is dropping at this moment in time when that's a lesson that I think all of us are having to wrestle with.
That's for sure. So, you know, when you think about a Broadway show coming together, I can't imagine a show taking a year. I'm used to shows taking 5 years, 8 years, 10 years. So it's kind of amazing to think that a year ago you were scouting, you were casting, and here you are. The show debuts tomorrow on Netflix. So exciting. So in such a tight period of time, you guys, did you know that it was going to be debuting on May 19th? Did you know that you had this short period of time to get it all together? Or did it just fall into place? How did it begin to come together, and how did you start to build your team?
Well, I should say that Dan and Cheryl were working on it much longer. My involvement started about a year ago, but they have been working on it probably another year before, 2 years before. So there was that, but we did not know when the show was going to be dropping for sure. We knew a rough time period. We knew that we were shooting for late spring, but until fairly recently, we did not know exactly when the show would be premiering.
We knew when we had to be done and when we had to deliver the show, but Netflix had to also look at what else was ready to go and, you know, look at their whole lineup. So we tried not to ask constantly. We would try to be really subtle about, so when we drop, but that was their decision and not ours. And I would like to think that the message of hope inherent in the show is part of the reason that they're releasing the show now.
We shot the show from we prepped May and June, and then we started shooting at the beginning of July, and then we shot until the end of October. And then we worked on post until just about a month ago.
Right. So. And you shot in Georgia, right?
That's yes. Right. In Atlanta.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when you're adapting from a book and you're, as opposed to starting from scratch, what are the considerations? You know, are you obligated to be true to the story? How much flexibility do you have? Was Cheryl Woods part of the creative process, or did she give you her blessings?
Yes. I really respect the fact that, well, first of all, Miss Woods is a wonderful writer. And secondly, she has a very faithful following. And I know how frustrating it is to love a book and then see its adaptation and say, wait, this is not at all what happened. And we have taken some liberties, but all with her blessings. And our main goal in the writer's room was to convey the main events that set everything going as truthfully as possible. And then in the characters and events that we created, do those to supplement and counterpoint the moments that we had taken from the book, but to make sure that everything still resonated thematically. We added some characters to put extra bumps in the road for some of the characters from the books, but we also added some characters just to flesh out the community because we wanted a wide range of people, of backgrounds, of ages, of orientations. We said from the very beginning, it was one of the first discussions I had with Miss Woods, we want everyone to be able to see themselves in Serenity. And so she was incredibly supportive of that. And we now have a community where the stories operate on three generations. We think the men in our community are as compelling as the women, and not just when they're in relationship with the women, though that's pretty key. And we wanted to be able to delve into these deeper interactions that come when you're an adult and you're still in the town where you were born, and everybody thinks they know you. And then when you want to be something different, some are supportive and some aren't.
Did you, at what point in time did you begin the casting process? Did you, was this start already shaped, or did you begin to develop with certain actors in mind?
We had in the writer's room what we call the ideal wall, which was a wall of post-its with actors that embodied the characters. Because when you're creating the first season of a show, to be able to say, you know, like Heather Headley, everybody is seeing the same person, even though we're hopefully creating a character for her that's slightly different than she's played before. So we had people in mind. But we began casting, March, I guess, February or March, Norman.
Yeah. Well, there were certain people in place. We did the majority of the casting beyond principals, in late April, early May, but it feels like that there were certain people already in place, at the point that, I came aboard.
Oh, that's true, because we had cast some of our leads in LA, and then we did the balance of the casting in Atlanta.
I feel like we did our the casting of Chris Klein and Justin Brunig. That was in April, and then
Brooke.
And yeah, well, we had Brooke even before that. Yeah,
yeah, and then Heather was cast in April. It feels like it's hard to remember now.
I feel like I should have my calendar out.
But we went through a process in Atlanta of casting a lot of the subsidiary parts and the supporting parts, and we were remarkably fortunate in terms of the talent that we found, in terms of the people that fill out the tapestry of this town. It was a lovely experience to go through the casting process, because again, Dan and Cheryl and I and our line producer Matt Drake were all very much on board with how we saw these various parts. There was very little debate about who our choices were, because we just all seemed to respond to the same things in the people who came in to audition.
And were you always going to be shooting in Atlanta, in Georgia? That was always the plan?
No, well, originally we were going to shoot in Vancouver.
It was a bit of a discussion, because when I came aboard, it was unclear how we were going to be able to do that and have it feel like the South. I've shot a lot in Vancouver on other shows, and I just I wasn't really sure how you were going to make any place in British Columbia look like South
Sweet
Carolina.
Sweet Maple Leaves. It's not Sweet Maple Leaves. we got that early on.
But Netflix.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Netflix got on board. I mean, they realized that this was the way to do it. It was a little more expensive, but they stepped up and said, let's do it the right way. Because when you're shooting down south, it permeates through the whole series. It makes a difference.
South is such a specific place, and it has such a specific feel. And even down to the background extras that we use, you want it to have an authenticity. And so it really was the right decision to go to Georgia to shoot this.
And Matt Drake, our line producer, is the unsung hero here, because he
was able to figure out a way that we could do the whole show in Atlanta, and not just a couple of weeks of exteriors in Atlanta and the rest in Vancouver. And though there were some steamy, humid days in Atlanta where I cursed his name, the show looks amazing as a result.
Yeah. And a show that involves delicious food, Atlanta just is as incredible food.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. We were really fortunate. A lot of our exteriors are in a town called Covington, and the restaurant that we borrowed for our restaurant, Sullivan's, is called the Mystic Grill, because it was the restaurant in Vampire Diaries. And Miss Angie, who runs Mystic Grill, I don't know about Dan and Norman, but she completely converted me to Southern food. I never imagined that, I mean, you know, real Southern food. I never imagined that I would be sitting here today with a container of pimento cheese in my refrigerator and missing fried green tomatoes. But it was lovely to be in an area that's got such a special cuisine when one of our main characters runs her own restaurant.
Exactly. Exactly. And was it intentional or just happened that you have so many talented theater performers that are in your cast?
I think it was very intentional. I think that we, both Cheryl and I, and I think Dan as well, we're all theater nerds on some level. And I think there was a real concerted effort to get people that we thought had a real training as actors, as opposed to, it was intentional, very much so.
I have a soft spot for theater actors. I trained as a playwright before I became a television writer. And there were plenty of theater names up on the ideal wall as we were writing. And it was delightful that, Heather was there from the very beginning. And when she was able to work her schedule and responded to the material and said yes, there was a lot of theater nerd dancing. And Dion Johnstone, who I knew from the last series I did, we had him in mind for the part of Eric all along. And then as we were figuring out our production schedule, he was cast in Glenda Jackson's Lear on Broadway. And I was like, hooray for my friend, but oh, woe is me for my show. And again, the hand of Providence, they closed a week or two early. And we were like, can you please, please come to Atlanta? And he came and we stole Chris Medlin from Mean Girls. And of course, Brooke had done a lot of Broadway.
Carolyn Lagerfeld is in the show, plays Joanna's mother, and she's a very established theater actress.
So is there any chance that it's in some episode, Heather Headley and the rest of your cast burst out into song? I have to ask.
we talked about that a lot and worked really hard to justify it. Norman has some fabulous videos of her singing backstage
that he might be
willing to share with you. And it was delightful because in between takes, especially when one of them, stopped and wanted to do a line again, both Heather and Brooke would sing as they went back to one. And I was, here I am, this theater nerd going, oh my gosh, Heather Headley is singing Lion King on the set of my show. It was kind of fabulous. So the all musical episode, we'll have to wait and see if we get a season two.
Oh yeah, definitely. Season two, please. So Norman, you have a special connection to theater.
I do.
Beyond just casting this beautiful show with amazing theater talent. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, my older sister is Betty Buckley, who has been in a lot of Broadway shows, and I really owe my career to her. She was in a movie called Tender Mercies, and just as I graduated from film school, she came to I had gone back to Texas, where we're both from, and the film was shooting there, and she happened to hear that the Australian editor was looking for an assistant, and she told him, my brother can do it. He just got out of film school, so he can do the job. And so that was really the beginning of my career, and I owe her a large debt of gratitude for that.
And we're going to be very excited to see her in season two of Sweet Magnolias.
That's up to Cheryl, but hopefully we'll find some place for her to...
Twist my arm.
it'd be great to see her wandering the streets of Serenity.
Has to happen. I'm excited about it. Had all of you worked together before? Is this a new collaboration?
It's a new collaboration.
No.
I had worked with Matt Drake, and he introduced me to Dan. And my co-EP, Shelley Meals, had worked with Norman. And as we were looking at this, oh my gosh, how do we do a couple of weeks in Atlanta and the rest in Vancouver? She said, I know who you need to have coffee with. So the three of us didn't know each other, but we were connected by good friends who did right by us and by the show. These two men are amazing to work with.
I was actually an editor for many years before I became a director, and I did edit a film for Dan probably 25 years ago. And I knew that the day that I went into Dan's office to meet with him, I looked up on the wall and saw the poster, and I was like, oh, I think we've probably met before because I edited this film for you, you know, like 25 years ago. So
what film?
North Shore Fish, which was based on a play.
It's in theater. I love that.
It was for Showtime. But I will say that one of the things that has been so extraordinary about this process is that we really did immediately bond as a creative team. And there was very little debate about the way to approach the show. We really were on the same page in terms of the approach. I certainly felt that from my first conversations with Cheryl, and certainly once we were on the ground and with Dan and with Matt, we all really saw the same show in our minds in terms of the approach to it. And that was very exciting. It was a real gift to work with people who collaborated so freely and so generously. And at the same time, you know, we were pulling on the same oar. We all saw it very much in the same way.
It's a tough gig, but when you're doing it with people you adore, it's less tough.
Yeah.
Well, certainly when you're telling a story that's filled with joy and hope and resilience, to have a team and to have that permeate the behind the scenes, I probably helps with the storytelling, I'm sure.
I think it does, because we made a point. I mean, my golden rule on set is that everybody feels safe and heard and respected. And the fact that the three of us get along so well and were, to borrow one of our episode titles, a united front, I think made everybody more comfortable and able to relax and completely give themselves over to the work. So we got better, deeper work out of everybody, including ourselves.
It's a very respectful set. I mean, people really like each other. And that goes from the production assistants all the way up to the producers. You know, everybody's heard. Cheryl said she'll listen to anybody if they have an idea, which is great.
It's a true family environment. It was a real family that we formed there amongst the cast and the crew. And we've talked about lately how much we miss everybody in this lockdown period.
Well, that's none of you have had the experience of releasing a television series in the middle of a pandemic before. Nobody has. But as you said, you know, what a perfect time for this show. Any time would be perfect, but this is, it all makes it higher level important. You know, it's going to, I think, speak to so many people right now. What is it like to have to roll out a brand new television show during this time?
I actually feel honored by the opportunity. I love the William Faulkner quote that it is the writer's privilege to help man endure by lifting his heart. And if we can do that, if we can entertain people and reassure them and sit beside them in this challenging time, then what a gift for us. And we certainly hope that people will embrace the show as a gift from our creative family to them.
From a producer's perspective, how is it different now, you know, with ramping up for through post-production? I'm sure some of it had to happen during all of this. What was that like?
Well, we were fortunate in the fact that we got in just under the wire with most of it. We were just finishing. I think we had to look at our last mix remotely, but we were pretty much there. We were pretty much at the finish line. We should give a big shout out to our post-production staff because they were the ones that were basically finishing it. Yeah. But as far as the three of us, our involvement, we had pretty much gotten right to the completion right about the time the lockdown started. We had just finished our last mix. So in that sense, we were very fortunate. But I will say that one of the things that has been good about this period of time is because I do think that so many people are trying to find ways to connect and communicate. We're very hopeful that the social media aspect of the show will allow people to find it and hear about it. And that's been a big part of a lot of the shows I've worked on in the past. I've worked on a lot of these teen shows that revolve around social media. And so I'm hopeful, and we were just talking a couple of days ago, Cheryl and I, just about the fact that there's a real opportunity in this period to talk about values. What are the values that we think are important, particularly coming out of such a period of time where we've all been kind of forced to go within to really think about that, to think about what's important in life and not to just fill up our time with distraction. But to find the real meaning and value in what we're doing. And the show is absolutely about that. And so it's kind of an affirmation to me about how the creative process is very mysterious, the way it comes to us almost more than something that we set out to do. It reveals itself. And Cheryl and I have been talking about that a lot lately, too, just about that when we ran into a roadblock of some kind, the answer revealed itself. And I do feel that this show at this particular time has a lot to say to the culture, to the society, and that's a good thing. So I, in some ways, while I wish that none of this had ever happened, it did. And within that, this show has something to say to that experience, I do believe.
This project, you've all gravitated to tell this story. And, you know, is it... Norman, you talked about how, you know, you've directed The OC and Chuck and Gossip Girl and Pretty Little Liars and The Fosters, and this is territory that telling powerful stories about amazing women is something that you're very comfortable with. Dan, I know you were working with the writer. Is this something that also the story from your own personal life, it was a story you had to tell?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, Cheryl's stories are all about hope. That's kind of a theme running through her books. And just in my life, I've always rooted for the underdog. very positive in that sense. And you know, I like to see things turn out well for people at the end, you know, triumph over whatever they're confronted with. So that's what I'm attracted to.
And Cheryl, for you, obviously this spoke to you in a very personal way. Now, being on the other side of this whole experience, do you feel that you've evolved along with the characters? Has it changed you?
Oh, absolutely. When we first started, it was very cathartic, of course. Not that I have a hunky baseball coach sitting in the other room, but still to work through loss and anger and uncertainty, and to travel with Maddie as she comes out the other side, and to look at how all of the fallout from a divorce impacts children. I have two, Maddie has three. It has been very affirming for me, because these are the times when, even before the pandemic came, just times of upheaval and change are when you step back and say, who in my life is truly here for me? Where can I turn for counsel and support? Who's going to make sure that I laugh as often as I cry? And who is going to have my back when I'm not sure about the next step to take? And that's very much what the three ladies go through. And it made me all the more grateful for the people in my life who were there for me. So it's wonderful to be on the other side of it now and to look back and say, well, Maddie still has a ways to go, but it's a good journey because it's rebuilding, it's reinvention, and it's reaffirmation.
And I would imagine you've come to know these women and all the family and characters surrounding them, that you have many ideas for, you know, where they're going in the future.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can safely say, a long, long time with these ladies and their families and friends. And we truly hope we'll be able to do that.
Knock on wood. Let's hope to continue.
I have a feeling that everyone is going to fall deeply in love with these women and with the story you're telling. I know the theater community is going to be glued and rooting for you. There's no question about that. Really excited to watch and to follow and to, you know, root for all these characters and to follow them into the future as well. And all of you, thank you for making such a important, beautiful show right now that is something we all, I think, are going to need and enjoy. So very grateful to the three of you and wish you all the best with it. And we'll be here rooting for the show. So thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. Delightful to meet you, and thank you for having us.
Yeah.
All right. Our pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Deep Dive Broadway, produced by Dori Berenstein, edited by Alan Seals, and special thanks to Bia and Brittany, who are fabulous. You can find me at bpn.fm/deepdivebroadway. My Instagram is dori.berenstein, which is B-E-R-I-N-S-T-E-I-N. Please subscribe and leave lots of fabulous comments. And check out my website at dramaticforces.com.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the Rise Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.